Talking Leafs podcast.
They have won the Stanley Cup!
Subscribe so you don't miss an episode on Spotify, SoundCloud, or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Here's Nick D'Souza and Kevin Papetti.
Welcome to the Everything Leafs podcast. I'm Kevin Papetti here as always. Joining me today is not Nick D'Souza for once. We have Arvind. If you're listening to this, there's like a 99% chance you know who Arvind is already. But he's a podcast with Acting the Fool. I'm in Back to Excited. Arvind, how are you? How was the game last night?
I'm regretting joining this already.
Where does that rank in terms of bad Leafs losses during this 8 years of playoff failures?
Oh, it's pretty high up there, isn't it, right? I mean, we are spoilt for choice in a lot of ways. There's many, many candidates for the worst loss. The ones that came to mind immediately were the Game 5 against Columbus in the bubble. Game 7 against Montreal was really, really demoralizing because you just felt that one slipping away, and to my memory, the Leafs generated no offense. This, I feel like it's up there with those two. Those are the three that immediately come to mind.
Yeah, I think Montreal Game 7, just because the rivalry has to be number one. And then the other game that really stands out to me is when one of the years Kadri got suspended, just because it was such a heated game and I don't know.
Oh, that was like, was it the game two against Boston? I think like 2019.
Yeah.
That was
officiating was terrible.
Yeah, that one was frustrating, but like for a different reason. I was like not that mad at the team, but I was like really, really mad at like the circumstances and like the Bruins actually themselves. And you know, that was, I mean, in a lot of ways for the NHL, that was like a really good game because it's just like the fan bases got so engaged and riled up into that series in the aftermath of that game.
Oh man, when you follow the Leafs this time of year, you always have plenty of losses to talk about, unfortunately. But I wanted to start with a bit of a draft here of reasons the Leafs are down 3-1. So obviously this is year 8. I think there's definitely a sense in the fan base of you're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I don't know if I fully agree with that. We'll get into that maybe in a bit later. But just in terms of this series in a vacuum, it's been 4 games. We have, I guess, plenty of reasons the Leafs are down. It's not like there's one player or one thing you can pinpoint it on. But if you were to say the number one reason, your number one pick why the Leafs are down in this series, what's your answer?
Special teams, I think, is the immediate answer. And I don't think I'm saying anything unique or novel there. I think people have been pointing this out for a while. You know, the story before the series, I think a lot of analysts were saying, okay, at 5-on-5, the Leafs look like they're probably like the better team at controlling play. But their power play has been bad for a little bit, and their special teams has been bad, the penalty kill has been bad the entire year. And how will that fare against Boston? And then the other issue was, well, Boston has like 2 good goalies, and the Leafs have like 0.5. And through 4 games, I think that has pretty much borne out exactly how people expected at 5-on-5. I don't think the Leafs have been great. We can talk about that more later. But it has been like a complete disaster at 5-on-5. What has been a complete disaster is the lack of punch from the power play and just how porous the penalty kill is. I think Boston has 6 power play goals in 4 games.
5, yeah. I have the numbers because I was obviously going to say that if you didn't. But series is 6-7 at 5-on-5. Boston's up by 1 goal. But, you know, you expect 2-2 with that differential. And then on special teams, it's 5 power play goals to 1, which, it's not even just bad. Like, that is about as bad as it could possibly be. I think the penalty kill's at, like, 50% or something.
Right. And it's worth emphasizing, this is not an especially talented Boston team offensively. Their power play one is, like, it's David Pastrnak and friends. Charlie McAvoy's a great player, but I don't think he's a superlative power play quarterback or anything like that. They've split up Pastrnak and Marchand because they need one of them on both units, because they don't have enough really great forward talent to actually have 2 good units.
Yeah.
You know, like Charlie Coyle is a key part of their power play one. And again, Charlie Coyle's a very solid player, had a great year, 60 points or something like that. But it's not a power play that should really strike fear into you, right? When you get to the business end of the playoffs, you think about the power plays that fear you or that make you fear. It's Colorado, it's Edmonton, it's Florida, all of whom have elite forward talent, and Boston simply doesn't have that. And despite that, they have cut the Leafs to ribbons.
Yeah, like, it's terrible. Like, it's almost unbelievable how often Boston's scoring on the power play. And I know in game one, like, Boston hit the post twice in the first on the power play, and the Leafs were lucky to escape it. It just feels like they can get any chance they want. And when you look at the talent on Boston, especially when you look at Boston from last year, like, you compare it to that team, like, the amount of talent they lost, if you look at Taylor Hall, you look at Nick Foligno, you look at Patrice Bergeron is obviously 1A there, Tyler Bertuzzi, Dmitry Orlov. It's not that all...
Krejci as well.
Krejci. It's not that all those guys play power play, but this Boston team does not look that deep compared to past years. Like, that team last year was a powerhouse. I know they lost first round, but that team was very, very good. They added a lot at the deadline. This team, this Boston team, didn't really add much at the deadline. You wouldn't expect them to be, you know, carving the Leafs penalty kill to pieces. And I think if you break down the Leafs special teams, you know, if you look at the power play kind of separate from the penalty kill, I think on the power play specifically, I don't really give much blame to Brad Treliving or the Leafs front office there, because yes, it's been a problem in different years, but I think you can look at the team and go, okay, you expect these five players to produce on the power play, right? Like, they obviously went out and tried to get Klingberg, and that didn't work out, but I don't really put that on the front office, like, in terms of the five that are playing. But the penalty kill, you're like, this was the priority at the deadline. You went out and got Labushkin, you went out and got Edmondson, you went out and got Duer. And even if you look at, like, guys that left in the offseason, like, Justin Hall left, and we can criticize Justin Hall all we want. He's a fine penalty killer. Zach Aston-Reese, Alex Kerfoot, Engvall left at the deadline, O'Reilly left in free agency. Like, so many penalty killers left, and even Sam Lafferty was a decent penalty killer. And it was priority number one at the deadline, and it feels like they could not have addressed it worse based on results so far.
Yes. I agree with pretty much all of that. One thing I do want to say, like, one trap I don't want to fall into is, you know, that the Leafs are the protagonists of reality and that Boston has nothing to do with their own success. Boston is, like, a solid, competent team. But that's the thing. They're a solid, competent team. I don't think they're one of the very best teams in the league.
I don't either.
They can be competitive because they have, you know, good enough goaltending that they can be competitive with anyone, and they have enough, you know, enough game breakers that they can survive. But, you know, it's looking like it's going to be Florida-Boston in the next round. Florida's going to be the favorite there, right? So when you look at this from that perspective, well, like, the Leafs are losing to a pretty good but not superlative team, right? And they're good value for this loss as well. So I wanted to make that point. I agree with you. Like, the power play, I agree. I don't really put a ton of blame on the front office for that. It is sort of a weird thing that keeps happening, that the Leafs' power play is very good in the regular season. I think it's almost always top five in the regular season, and has consistently fallen apart in the playoffs. And, I mean, I think someone would have to do a really thorough analysis to really ascertain why that is. Anecdotally, it does seem like the Leafs have, you know, one way to gain the zone on the power play. And when it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and they just, you know, go nowhere. But even yesterday on the 4-on-3 that the Leafs got, they had like a full minute of 4-on-3. They got set up in the zone, and all they got out of it were two pretty undangerous William Nylander shots that both got blocked. Right? And, like, that's not good enough. Granted, you know, I'm being a little bit unfair here. The Leafs have had other strong 4-on-3s in this series, right, in earlier games, but the power play just looks so ghastly right now, and I think that is almost all on the coaches and the players.
The only, I guess, so we were chatting, like, for a few minutes before we started recording, and I think the combination, like, when you look at 5-on-5 specifically, I look at Boston, you look at their top three centers, and you go, how are the Leafs not beating this team at 5-on-5? It's been pretty much 50-50. I don't think the Leafs 5-on-5 play has been dreadful by any means, but one thing we were kind of chatting about is it's such a low event game at 5-on-5. Like, it feels like both teams are trying to, you know, play 0-0 hockey or 1-1 hockey, And then Boston's just kind of waiting it out, waiting for the special teams battle to begin. And then once the special teams battle starts, they dominate, right? So I think adding to this, you know, terrible special teams is that the Leafs aren't really, like, they're not playing high event, high scoring hockey at 5-on-5. Like, this is a snooze fest at 5-on-5, combined with just a massive, massive edge on special teams. I think the other thing on the power play that you can maybe give them an excuse for is I'll call it the Leafs being cursed, and that's Nylander missing the first three games with migraines after not missing a game due to injury for 7 years. And then I think Matthews, the last two games here, has kind of looked like a shell of himself with the illness. So, but again, it's happened so many years that you're like, it's not just like a one-time thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. As we were saying before the series, this was a matchup of, you know, can the Leafs' high-powered offense break through at 5-on-5? And the Leafs do have a high-powered offense at 5-on-5, at least during the regular season, right? They consistently get to the high-value areas of the court, or sorry, of the ice, and they consistently put up goals. And as you said, they have not done that at all. It feels like Boston has completely neutralized the Leafs' ability to get consistent zone entries, and the Leafs are either unable or unwilling to play the retrieval game. I do think it's a bit of a misnomer to think that the Leafs are like kind of a rush team that needs controlled zone entries to succeed offensively. I think, you know, when they're at their best, Marner and Matthews are just absolute hounds on the forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how they create a lot of offense. It's off the cycle, off of like puck retrievals, off of, you know, Matthews stick lifting and then starting a cycle and then getting to the front of the net. It's sort of like a counter press. That's where the Leafs are at their best.
They're both takeaway specialists. Boston. Like, if you look at their numbers.
Yes, and Nylander is like not good defensively, but he does have a good stick defensively. Like he is very good at playing defense to cheat for offense.
Mm-hmm.
And it works because he's so talented. But basically none of that has come to the fore. And you know, you do have to give credit to Boston for shutting the Leafs down in that regard. I do think it's easy to talk about excuses. I'm sure some people will think that like Matthews is like faking this illness or it's overstating it, or that Nylander was like faking these migraines or overstating it and that they're not tough. I should be very clear and say that like I don't think the Leafs' problems is that their stars are not tough or that they don't care. They might not be good enough. That's a reasonable opinion to have. But I think it's unlikely that, you know, someone like Matthews, who grows up in hockey terms in the middle of nowhere, right, and like not a scouting hotbed to say the least, could work his way to being as good as he is, and certainly a lot of this is talent too, but like can work his way to be as good as he is without like being kind of relentlessly competitive.
Yeah, I think there's a Acting the Fool in tweet about Marner not caring, and it's like I think I agree with it, or it's like I think Marner cares a great deal. Like I've never questioned how much these players care. Like I'm sure Marner is probably as mad as anyone right now.
Yeah, I think Marner wants to win more than like he wants air, right? Like I think he really, really, really wants to win, to the point where it's almost like you can see it weighing on him at times.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lack of caring. If anything, it could be too much caring that's the problem. And I do think that, you know, a lot of fans like to oversimplify things and just think, you know, this team has all the talent. If they just tried harder, if they just cared more, they'd be a Stanley Cup champion. I know from like when everyone's playing hockey and, you know, you're in the dressing room, it's a good thing to say, like, let's just try as hard as possible. We can do anything. But I don't know. Like it's too oversimplified for me. Some of the analysis, I'm guessing.
I mean, hockey and pro sports are not like an everyday workplace, but, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, at a workplace or whatever, like the answer also is like not necessarily just like, oh, we need to try harder, right? It's like, okay, sometimes you just don't have the skills. Sometimes you're not good enough.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I think it's totally reasonable to, if your answer for why the Leafs have been bad in the playoffs is just like, these guys are not good enough. That possibility is completely on the table.
Yeah, so I want to get through this series, and like I think, given the Leafs' circumstances where they've lost really, they've had 8 years. I mean, last year they did win a round, but 8 years of not a ton of playoff success, to say the least. I think everyone wants to kind of group it all together and get one simple answer of why this hasn't worked, and then they flip the switch and everything changes. But I guess before we get into like other years and similarities and differences to other years, like if we just look at this series in a vacuum, I think we've addressed the special teams. I think that's story number one. B being just this low event 5-on-5 play combined with the terrible special teams. Like the Leafs have nowhere they're really winning right now, right? Like it's like even at 5-on-5, crushed on special teams. The goaltending, I think, has been advantage Boston. I mean, Samsonov in game three, that one goal that DeBrusk beat him, no, it was
Frederick.
That can't go in. Like, no
chance.
That
was a horrible goal. Yeah, that was a really bad goal. I mean, I think the goaltending has been in Boston's favor, but like to the degree that was expected, basically.
Yeah, like I don't think the story of this series is goaltending by any means. Slight edge, but again, Samsonov did make some big saves at other times that kind of somewhat made up for those. But again, like even in game four, that JVR goal, I thought he was kind of swinging at his net. It hasn't been ideal, but it hasn't been like a main storyline either, in my opinion. But when I look at, I do think like if you just look at the health of the star player, like the way the Leafs are built, and you can question like can the Leafs win with a core four? And I kind of question like the whole core four term now that I think Riley has to be considered core with his contract. To me, it's like a core five. But the one disadvantage of when you load up on, you know, a small group of players is that if anyone's missing, you're kind of screwed, right? Like, instead of being, if the cap's at 83.5, as soon as you're missing one player, you're now like a $72 million team, right? So we saw it in previous years with Tavares going out game one against Montreal, that all of a sudden the Leafs just didn't have the same scoring depth. And I think we're seeing it again here where, you know, for the first three games, Nylander being out, you kind of combine it with Brody at his $5 million being out. Like, the Leafs were not icing an $83.5 million roster. Like, it's almost like they've been the anti-Vegas, where Vegas goes into the playoffs and all of a sudden they have, like, a $95 million roster. The Leafs have been playing, like, a $70 million roster out there or something. And then, especially if you consider Matthews being sick, like, I just think you look at this team and whether you think this model can work or not, I think the clear disadvantage is always going to be if someone's out, you're less likely to sustain or replace them effectively, right? Like, I think that's the main draw or the main takeaway with Nylander being out.
Right. I also think that, you know, if this was year one of something like this happening, there'd be a lot more sympathy for that. But I think people are understandably so frustrated about, as you said, 8 years of pretty minimal playoff success that they kind of don't want to hear any excuse about the Leafs being, you know, relatively, or at least even a little bit unlucky with respect to their stars just missing time due to like weirdness.
But this is, I agree with you that people don't want to hear it, but in this case, I think it's an underrated storyline, right? Like,
yeah, no, it's legitimate, right? Nylander was for large parts of this year the Leafs' second best player.
Yeah,
and he was missing from the first three games. That matters a lot. Matthews, we don't know to what extent he is suffering from illness and like what the consequences of those illnesses are and how like different it is to like, okay, what if, you know, even fully healthy Matthews can have bad games and has done so in the playoffs before. But yeah, like it probably matters at least a little bit. And yeah, I think you're definitely correct about the fact that, you know, when you're a top heavy team, you have sort of fewer points of failure, which can be good in some ways, right? You're very robust to your fourth line center going down. You're very robust to even like your one of your nine interchangeable wingers going down. But you have no hope against, you know, you have no hope against one of your top players going down. And that's been borne out a few times now.
Yeah, I think in a vacuum, it's a huge deal, like the Nylander-Matthews situation. I think because it's year eight, people don't want to hear it. But I do think that, you know, regardless of whether or not people want to hear it, that it's true. Like, I think when I looked at the series coming in, like, it was like the Leafs have three in my opinion, 100-point forwards, right? I know Marner didn't quite get there. I know Nylander didn't quite get there. But Matthews, Marner, Nylander versus Pasternak, because Marchand's 35. I think he was short of 70 points. Like, I think Pasternak led Boston scoring by, like, 43 points. I just feel like that advantage where you had Matthews on one line, Marner on another line, Nylander on the third line, it just kind of fell apart pretty quickly, right? Like, it's not... The Leafs' scoring depth just wasn't there without Nylander, especially with Matthews not being at 100%. Like, it felt like they had no dominant lines and two okay lines and then a bottom six that's kind of, you know, can't really score. I don't know. When you look at this team and how they're built at 5-on-5, like, I think the other thing I wanted to mention is just the lack of puck movers on the back end. Like, no, they're not. You don't. It's hard to, like, circle Edmondson or Benoit and be like, you're the reason this team's not scoring. It's all your fault, given how little they make and how, like, their minutes are kind of limited. Obviously, like, it does fall on players like Matthews to score and Marner, regardless of who's on the back end. But I will say, like, after Morgan Rielly, you look at this blue line, and it's like, I think McCabe's a decent puck mover, but then you go, like, Labushkin, Benoit, Edmondson, and last night it was Brody. Like, I don't know. Like, I do think that this defense, even if they did beat Boston, like, I think at some point this defense was going to let them down. I think if you look at this team on paper, it's just not good enough on the back end.
Yeah, I mean, the Leafs haven't hemorrhaged goals during this series. And I think people have taken that to say, hey, look, the defense isn't really the problem here. And I think there's some merit to that. It's worth noting Boston is not really a super strong offensive team, right? So this is not the most stressful situation for the Leafs defense.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that people often miss when it comes to, like, evaluating players, and this is, like, sort of an analog to quote-unquote big mistaking players, like, you know, penalizing players when they make a big mistake and not penalizing them for, like, doing mildly bad things fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that people underrate and undervalue about good players, essentially, is that they just make good things happen. Like, the absence of doing anything horrifically wrong doesn't make you a good player.
Right.
Right? Good players do things that help you. They don't just, like, not take stuff off the table. They put stuff on the table. And I would say basically none of the Leafs defensemen, with the exception of Rielly, really even have it in their locker to put something on the table. Kind of the best they can do is not take stuff away, which is fine. That, I mean, because of the cap structure that the Leafs have, that, you know, they're limited to that in a lot of ways. And I don't think it's, like, it's not exactly, like, getting mad at Joel Edmondson because he's not dangling someone and, you know, setting up a forward back door is a bit like getting mad at your dog for not doing your homework, right? Like, what are you expecting?
Yeah.
Right? But it does hurt the Leafs that no one on their back end can actually do that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a blame Edmondson thing. I think it's more of, like, a...
Yeah, yeah, he's just an example. It's just, like, just the Leafs have a bunch of guys who just you can't reasonably expect to actually, like, contribute in a meaningful offensive way.
Yeah, so, I think that goes... That's more of a front office criticism, if anything, but I think we agree.
Yeah, well, and yeah, and this is something I said at the deadline of, like, okay, the Leafs made a bunch of moves that are... You know, in a vacuum, like, fine. I don't think they were great. I thought some of them were, like, suboptimal. But the big thing to me is, like, no one who the Leafs acquired at the deadline was really going to move the needle. It's the same team.
Yeah.
Right? Now, in comparison to what happened last year, you know, Ryan O'Reilly was a needle mover. And I was really optimistic at the time. It didn't work out as well as I hoped. O'Reilly's, you know, struggled after the first few games of the playoffs. But that was a move that, at least in principle, had the potential to really, like, shake up the team. Even, like, kind of the much maligned Nick Foligno move, you know, it obviously didn't work out well, was not a great move, but at least it had, like, some actual potential there to change the trajectory of the team. Even in the best case scenario of Ilya Lyubushkin and Joel Edmondson and Connor Dewar, you're tinkering around the edges.
Yeah, I think Lyubushkin's been a pleasant surprise. Like,
he's been fine. Yeah, he's been fine. Like, I know his numbers are pretty good. He has been played, like, a pretty small amount of minutes, right? So I think they are. Like, some of that is because there's always, like, this usage efficiency trade-off, and I think his usage is, like, not tremendously high or tremendously, like, onerous.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for what we're paying him and what it costs to acquire him, him being like a competent third pairing guy is good. It's just the Leafs have like five of him.
Yeah, like it does feel like the Shen. He's probably not quite as good as how Shen played last year, but it does feel like Shen light. Like I think that deal is working out as expected. It's just when you have having one of those guys is great, but then you look at like it feels like when Benoit's on the ice and Benoit's a fine. He's turned into a fine NHL contributor, but. Benoit's skill set is I'm going to go out there and be a fast forward button and nothing's going to happen when I'm on the ice. And then I think from Joel Edmondson's perspective, you're kind of looking for the same thing. So Benoit and Edmondson play on two different pairings. When they're out there, nothing happens, right? Like the Leafs are getting so few chances when Benoit's out and then Edmondson goes out and they get so few chances. And I think as you said, like, yes, they don't make huge mistakes, but like I remember like Erik Gustafsson comes to mind last year and that guy could create offense, right? Like, if he got the puck on the blue line, he could make something happen. Like, he could set up a high-danger scoring chance. He didn't have to just make a simple play to the forwards. And I think if I'm Boston's coaching staff, like, I'm basically going, daring Toronto to pass the puck back to the blue line, right? Because there's really, like, one guy that's going to hurt you in Riley. If Lyubushkin has the puck in the offensive zone, if Benoit has the puck, if Edmondson has the puck, if Brody have the puck, you're just not worried whatsoever, right? Like, they can only make simple passes. You can almost leave them uncovered and focus on Toronto's forwards. Like, I don't know. It feels like they went a little bit too overboard on the defense thing. And then I do think that has to be kind of criticism number one of this front office is you look at the team that, you know, they had at the start of the offseason last year. They had a lot of cap room. I think that gets, you know, unnoticed how much cap room they
had. Right, yeah, like... They spent a lot in the offseason.
They spent a lot. And you had Matt Murray going to LTIR. You had Jake Muzzin. You know, his cap hit was on the books at the start of last year. Now it wasn't. You look at Bertuzzi. Like, it's not that all their signings worked out poorly. I think Bertuzzi was fine for his cap hit. Domi's probably some surplus value. But, you know, obviously, I mean, I don't want to talk about the Klingberg deal. I think that's kind of well established, like how poorly that went. And
I mean, I think it's worth mentioning, like, the Leafs got really lucky with John Klingberg.
In terms of having his cap hit, yeah.
Well, in terms of, like, the fact that he could be LTIR. Now, maybe the Leafs thought that. Like, oh, if he's going to be... Maybe they thought the downside was he's bad and we can LTIR him. It doesn't seem super obvious to me that, like, in advance, that they could have LTIR'd him if he was, like, terrible. Because if he was, like, terrible and, you know, not injured, or, like, not as injured, like, only, you know, half as injured as he is now... They're stuck playing him, and he was horrific.
Yeah, yeah, they got lucky. They never really like fully replaced him though. Like they had all that cap space, and they at the deadline, if you look at their roster, like they kind of used that cap space to build depth. So they used some of that cap space to have three goalies, for example, and then I think they had like Connor Timmins and like eight defensemen or nine defensemen. And then like even adds like Connor Dewar without adding anyone, like without subtracting anyone. I don't know if that was the way to go. Obviously, they didn't go and, you know, they didn't trade a first or anything, so it's not like, it wasn't like the best deadline to add, but they, when you look at, if you went all the way back to the start of last offseason, like, they had a ton of money to spend, and they really didn't address the blue line. Like, it's not like there was, you know, a ton of signings that I was a fan of and that I wanted True Living to do, but it's tough to give Treliving like an A for this season because, you know, at some point it's kind of like how the Leafs are built where I think his pro so far Treliving has been like he's avoided huge mistakes. It's not like he's gone out and signed like a David Clarkson contract. Most of the players he gave money to or big money to have been short term. And then you look at like the guys he gave term to and, you know, Reeves and Camp, you complain about all they want, but it's pretty low impact in terms of their cap hit. He's only really traded like thirds, so like he hasn't really crushed the franchise. I don't think you can possibly argue that, but there haven't been those like huge wins or like huge gambles where you go, okay, this guy's a huge difference maker, and this is the guy that we got to like completely change our defense, right? It just, you look at this defense, right, and you're like, for all the money you had, how is this the defense?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I guess the other thing we should mention is we haven't really talked about kind of the quote-unquote failure of the core four and what that means for them
going forward.
I know you said you don't like the term the core four or core five, but to some extent, like the reason a lot of the coverage focuses on, you know, the defense and other things is because you can't do much with the top four forwards and Riley at this point, right? Like, you just go down the list. If the Leafs trade Matthew, like, it'll be decades before the Leafs get a player as good as Austin Matthews again. Even if he's 75% of himself in the postseason every single year, you still can't really trade him because he's so good,
right,
that you're just, like, unserious as a franchise if you get rid of him,
yep,
more or less, right? Tavares is, you know, no team will give up anything for the last year of Tavares' deal, which he's clearly not worth. He has a no-move clause. He's the captain. He has three young kids. He's not moving.
Right.
Right. You just signed Nylander. I think he has a no-move clause throughout as well. He's not moving. You just signed Riley, or like a year or two ago. You know, maybe you can move him if you want, but I think that boat probably sailed. You could sort of make this argument with Marner, but like the reason that we don't talk as much, or we're not talking as much about those guys right now, is because, like, what can you do with them?
Yeah.
Right? You're just in this position where, like, you have these guys and you need to maximize everything around them to the extent that you can.
Yeah, I don't think they did well to maximize around them a lot of years. Like, I think the first question is, like, is it possible to win with this core five? I think the answer is, I'm pretty confident, yes, if you do it correctly. I think they've done a poor job at building around them. Now, it's not like these players have, you know, they deserve some of the blame for sure, but you go through the rosters that have been thrown out there and, like, mistakes were made, right? Like, I think you look at the start, you look at the defenses that were on the Leafs back when, you know, the early years of the Matthews-Marner era, when those guys were cheap. Like, you had tons of cap space back then to build around them and build a powerhouse team. And you had, like, Zaitsev, Polak, Hunwick on the back end, like, Connor Carrick, Marinson, like, I was going through the teams and, like, looking at their defenses, and it was just like, you guys spent way too long trying to get good, right? I think the two of us have talked about the Marleau signing when he was, like, 37, 3 years. It was, like, $6.2 million. And, like,
it was a lot.
And in today's dollars, and that's what, like, 7.3? I don't know. I'm making a number up. But
it's like what the Stars are paying Jason Robertson. And I know that's not fair because it's, like, you know, Jason Robertson's an RFA. But, like, it's a lot of money is the point.
And you just look at the defenses, and then you look at, like Kadri, like, yes, there's been, if you're going to have as little playoff success as the Leafs in 8 years, like, a lot of things have to not go your way. But, like, they've had tough matchups. They've had, you know, key players miss, whether it be Kadri suspended, whether it be Tavares only playing a game. But I do think that part of the reason they haven't won with this core five isn't the core five. I mean, they deserve some responsibility for sure, but, like, you go through the 8 years and you're like, okay, mistakes were made, right? Like, the Kadri trade was, I think, hurt the Leafs a ton.
It was very bad.
And I just think you look at the defenses that they threw out there, especially in the early years, and you're like, yeah, I can see why they lost. Like, I can see why this team was not that good. I think we're going to look back on this team and, again, look at the defense and be like, really? That's what they played? Like, I think if we go 3 years from now, you go and look at the lineup from these games, you're gonna be like, this was the defense they went with. Even if you look at like the Foligno trade, I didn't think it was great. I think that, you know, the Columbus year, I think the team was just legitimately bad. And then you look at, like, Carey Price played really well, Bobrovsky played really well, there's an area of that. But I do think, especially this year, when you really had no bad contracts, like, Tavares was kind of iffy, but you didn't really have the anchor. Like, I think you had, like, I don't know, like, the Zaitsev deal in the early years, and then you had, like, you got out of the Matt Murray and the Jake Muzzin situations. You got kind of lucky there. You got out of Klingberg. Like, you had cap flexibility here to have a really good team. Tough to find the right players in free agency, and, True Living didn't have a ton of draft capital, but I do think this team could be much better. Like, if you redid it and went back to the offseason, like, you could have put a team together that's a true contender. I don't know. Like, I find it a bit annoying how people act like the Leafs are the one seed every year and they just completely choke. Like, a lot of these years, they're like the underdog going into the playoff series. And it's like, right, there's some huge holes on this roster.
Yeah, Down Goes Brown had a good article about this in the aftermath of yesterday's game, where he's just like, this team just isn't good enough, right? And it's, you know, the roster is not overwhelmingly stacked, as you mentioned. I think basically, you know, the Leafs, as we know it, they're not done, right? Like, as long as Austin Matthews is a Leaf, the Leafs will have some hope. But looking through the history of Austin Matthews' Leafs teams so far, I think you can really only point to 21, 22, and 23, by which I mean, like, you know, the last season is 23, as like, hey, these are teams that can actually be contenders. Like, these are actually top five-ish teams in the league.
Yeah, agree. I think there's two. I mean, the one year when Tavares got hurt and Foligno got hurt, I guess that Montreal year, I could kind of see it, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Leafs had such an easy path to
that could have been
the Final Four that year. Tavares and Foligno getting hurt really sucked, obviously. But I think it's like they were clearly the best team in the North.
Yeah.
And then it didn't work both because of some failures within the team and also because of some bad luck, right? It's always a combination of both.
Yeah.
And then 22 and 23, they faced... You know, 22, they faced a really, really, really good Tampa team that went to the finals, that was coming off two cups.
Yep.
And were basically, that was a 50-50 series.
Yep, agree.
Right? Last year, they faced another pretty good, but not quite as good Tampa team. That was, again, pretty much close to a 50-50 series. This time, they won it. And then they faced a Florida team that was, you know, again, quite good. And it didn't work. So it's...
But that team was pretty good on paper, right? Like, you look at that team.
Yes.
When we go back 5 years from now and look back on that team, we're going to go, oh, this was a good team.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, like, basically the most disappointing years have been the bubble year. The bubble year just because Columbus was so bad, right?
But that team
the
just sucked. Division year because... Like, that Columbus team was not good.
No, it was a genuinely bad team.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like, the North Division... And then these last 2 years, because these are the years where the Leafs have actually been like a good team. The previous series against Boston, the Leafs were kind of lucky to, you know, to get to seven in 2018, and in 2019 it was Boston was the better team.
Yeah, I think if the Leafs even beat Boston, like, you look at that the defense they had, Toronto, like, the second Boston year was pretty good. We had Tavares and Kadri. I mean, Kadri only played two games, but. I think that year they had hope, even though the defense was terrible. Their forwards were just so good. But that first Boston year, like, the defense sucked. Like,
yes. So in terms of, like, where they go from here, it's hard to say. But I think what it boils down to is that the Leafs just haven't really built that many rosters that are consistent, where you're like, oh, this is a President's Trophy. You know, contending roster. This is a team that is going to be in the top five of the league. They've had 3 years of that. One of them was the weird North Division year.
Yeah.
And then they've come down. And in those years, they didn't make a count. So now the question is, how do you get back to that level? And actually, ideally to a higher level, because I think even in those years, the Leafs were not. They weren't like the very best team in the league or anything. They were like a pretty good, they were a very good team that was like not necessarily like the absolute best.
So I think when I'm looking at, like, if the Leafs are, obviously, like, the series isn't over. In theory, the Leafs could come back, beat Boston, go on and win the Cup, and we're having a much different conversation. But assuming the Leafs are out in five or six, because I think those are the most likely outcomes at this point, I think it's very likely Keefe's not back, is my guess. I think just...
Oh, yeah. I think no matter what happens... outside of the Leafs winning, no matter what happens, if the Leafs lose this series, I think Keefe is out.
Yeah, I agreed. I think part of that, you know, I don't know if he... I think Acting the Fool-Man tweeted about this. I don't know if he's the problem or a main problem or even a negative. I have no idea. It's hard to evaluate coaching, but given all like the power play struggles year after year after year, given the lack of scoring year after year after year, I think it's like... That is one where I'm like, okay, this might just be a good time for a change, like... I wouldn't mind seeing something else after this.
Right, I agree. I pretty much agree with that entirely. Like, it's there's no guarantee a new coach fixes things, right? But Keith probably seems like he's not going to be the solution. So it's okay. You know, let's move on. Figure out another coach who could be. I think he's going to have like a very long NHL career if he wants it.
Yeah. I think with Tree Living, he hasn't done enough to in theory, you could go and say, I can find a better GM, I'll go make the change. But it's not like he's done enough to deserve to get fired after 1 year.
No, I mean, my view on Tree Living is that I absolutely do not trust him to build the next great Leafs team.
Yeah.
But they're not going to fire him after one season where he really didn't do anything that negative.
The question next is Shanahan, which is interesting, right? Because, I think you never know how much to put on the GM versus the president. I think you can finger point at Dubas for the bad moves. You could finger point at Lou for the Marleau deal. But on the other side, he's the one ultimately in charge here of the general manager and picking the general managers, and they haven't had a ton of success. So I know Keith Pelley's new to MLC. We'll see what happens with Shanahan. Again, I could see a world. I think you could convince me either way. If I'm Keith Pelley, I'm kind of weighing the Shanahan thing, but it's hard from the outside because we don't know what Shanahan was saying and wanting to do versus what Dubas wanted to do or versus what Tre Living wanted to do or versus what Lou wanted to do. We don't know what influence he's having. But I do think that we might have that conversation now because, the only thing with getting rid of Dubas now is I think if Dubas was here, if he had signed a 3-year deal, I think he might be gone after the series, if assuming this is the case. 7 years, I don't think you could have gotten rid of him after one. I think that's why he ultimately didn't stay here because I don't think Shanahan was confident doing that, but it's not like he has Dubas as a scapegoat now. I don't know if scapegoat's the right word, but I think I'm interested to see, how many fingers are pointed at Shanahan's way because ultimately you can't really blame Tre Living for anything or for too much yet.
Right. I think Shanahan's job security is kind of as much about boardroom politics as it is about what he's done.
Yeah.
Right. And that part is, of course, completely foreign to us.
Yeah, well it's tough. We don't know if Shanahan was saying don't trade Kadri, but if you want to, I'll I'm not gonna deny the move, or if Shanahan was driving the Kadri trade. With all these trades and all these decisions, we don't know what his opinion was, right? If he agreed, what he agreed with, what he didn't. So it's hard from the outside looking in. But whether it's Shanahan, whether it's Tre Living, I think the key question that we get every single offseason is, do you break up the core four? It feels like we've been doing this for years and years and years, and the answer has always ended up being no. I guess the question is this year going to be different? It kind of felt on Dubas' end of season press conference that, I don't know if it was just reading between the lines, if it was doing it incorrectly, but it sounded like if he was here, I was kind of curious if Marner would have been gone. And I think any Marner trade just has a chance to be, given his impact, given how good of a player he is, it could be there's the potential to completely win a deal and get a massive return that completely changes the franchise. Or there's a chance where you do the Tkachuk to, what happened to Calgary with Tkachuk, where it's just you can make a terrible, terrible trade. So I think you kind of went through it. I don't think anyone's expecting Matthews, Riley, or Nylander to move. I think with Tavares, you see the odd tweet. But to me, it's he's got a full no move. He signed here for the reason to kind of stay here forever. And then I do think there's a chance he takes a big discount to stay here afterwards. And he's your captain. I don't think he's moving. The question really becomes Marner. I think my frustration with the Marner trade discourse is are you doing this for the sake of change, or are you doing this to get better, right? Are you doing this because you can't stand the core four, or do you legitimately think that this Marner trade is going to improve your franchise, right? To me, it's what's the trade? It's obviously I don't think you just start off or trading Mitch Marner, taking best offer. He's 100% getting moved. To me, it's maybe we listened on Marner offers, but he's got the full no move, right? Unless you get him on board, it's a tough deal to win.
Right. I mean, I'm not immune to this feeling, but I do think a lot of Leafs fans want to trade Marner to, like, punish him in some way. Like, or because they are just, like, annoyed of him and sick of having to hear about him and having to go through these discussions. Like,
yeah.
I think that's, like, a very natural fan impulse, but it's not a good reason if you're running a team to make the trade.
Yeah, agree. Right. We could have a whole podcast on Marner and, like, the contract negotiations and...
Right, I think people are still, like, bitter. A lot of people are still annoyed about that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I get to the extent that it makes sense to be annoyed about any individual player on this team. Like, it was a really terrible contract negotiation from the Leafs' perspective.
Yep.
And it does have to be said, the Leafs are getting probably, like, the lowest value of any team on players of this caliber.
Yep. Well, Nylander right? got like, everything he wanted. Like,
yeah, and it's kind of bizarre to me because, like, I don't know what this negotiation actually entails. Now, look, I've never negotiated a tens of millions of dollars of contract, right? So I'm not going to pretend that, if it was me, they would have signed for $1.5 million less. But, like, what is being negotiated here? There's only, like, four things that can change, right? Like, term, AAV, a trade protection, and signing bonuses. And the Leafs players consistently get on the high end for every single one of them.
Yeah, I think, so with Matthews, it's like, that guy could get anything he wants. Yes, see McDavid, McKinnon take less. Why doesn't he? But I don't really blame the GM, because I think it's just Matthews can take whatever he wants to take.
Right. Like, you're kind of at the mercy of how much Matthews wants to use his leverage.
Because you'll give him whatever he wants. You're not
at that mercy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not at that mercy for Nylander and Marner, who are very good players, but are, like, replaceable.
Yeah, and I think...
At least in theory.
I think the first Nylander one ended up being a bargain, and you brought him to the last possible second, and I think you played hardball. I think that almost had a negative impact on the Marner thing, where it was like, we don't want this to go into the season... I don't think Dubas played his hand well with the Marner negotiation.
No, not at all.
I think the Nylander holding him out actually it was actually good for Marner's camp, because they were like, they don't want this going long. They want to get this over with.
It didn't help that Nylander was like not very good when he came back. Or I mean, his play driving was fine, but he just couldn't finish anything.
Yeah, and then Dubas leaves, and you're like, okay, maybe. I think one of the hopes when Trilling came in was that, you know, maybe he's a better negotiator in these types of RFA deals, and it felt like Nylander got whatever he wanted, right? So
yeah, no, that was that contract. Like, Nylander, people who have followed, like, my work for a long time know how much I love William Nylander.
Yeah,
but that contract's not good.
No,
right? It's just, like, not good value for what Nylander provides on the ice. And he's a great, great player, but. They're paying him like he is one of the 10 or 15 best players in the league, and he's not.
Yeah, I agree. So now with the Marner, the Marner situation is going to be interesting, because what's complicating it with him is the term left on the deal, right? Like, if he's signed for 6-7 years, he almost has to want out in order to trade him, right? Because he has all the cards. Mm-hmm. The one card you do have is, I think the first question is, you go to Mitch and you go, what do you want on your next extension, right? Because... In theory, if he's like, I'll take less, give me $10 million, I'll take a pay cut, I think that deal gets done pretty quickly and you keep Marner, right? I don't know. I'm sure fans would still complain because they're sick of Marner, they want him out. But if I'm the general manager and Marner, I don't think it's going to happen, but if he came and said, I want $10 million, now I'm like, okay, you're playing here for the next 7 years. I'm not thinking of trading you, right? You're signing this.
Right.
I think we both think that he's not taking less than Nylander. And
yes,
the question is, like, what's the number? Like, does he want Matthews money? Does he want Nylander's contract exactly? What's the number that he wants? And then we all have a walk away, right? Like, if he asks for $16 million, we're both saying no. I do think it's worth it for the Leafs then to go, okay, we're not going to pay you what you want. And that, if in this hypothetical, can we trade you now to a place you want to go and get a return rather than seeing you walk for nothing? So I think that's going to be the question. With Marner's no move, it's just tricky because if he doesn't give the Leafs a big list, the other team just has a ton of leverage, right? Like, if he gives them one or two teams, it's tough for the Leafs to make a deal that makes sense for them, right? The more teams Marner gives, the better chance for a good return.
He also has no real incentive to give the Leafs, like, a big list, right? Like, it's... From his perspective, you know, there's probably no real difference to him, unless he really wants to get out of Toronto, which he may, but, like, just from, like, a kind of a profit-seeking point of view. The contract that he gets probably is not going to change that much, whether he plays his next year in Toronto or his next year in, I don't know, just pick a team, right? If anything, it might be a little higher if he plays in Toronto, because you're going to rack up regular season points if you play next to Austin Matthews a lot of the time, which he probably will.
Yep. Well, I think if he gets traded, he's signing an extension like day one. I don't think a team's trading for him as a rental.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a good point. So I guess that's another thing. Like, what are the teams that Marner is, like, willing to sign an extension for, right? And if those teams don't have good potential offers for the Leafs, then kind of might just be dead on arrival, right? Where that team's like, okay, well, we can't offer you anything, so you're not going to trade him to us, and we'll just try our luck next year and sign him.
Yeah.
Try and sign him.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, and I mean, I think the Leafs realistically have to play hardball with Marner when it comes to this next contract negotiation, because, you know, what choice do they have, right? They clearly need a better, just like a better team overall, right? This team, even if they are more respectable against Boston, are not a real legit contender, right? Almost every model, including like sports books and Vegas, had the Leafs as, like, maybe the 8th to 12th best team in the league this year.
Yep.
You can win a cup as the 8th to 12th best team, but it's not that likely.
I think if Marner's back, like, there's a clear path forward to improving around the I'll call them the core five, right? Like,
yeah,
this isn't the best possible team you can put out there with this core five. I think, I don't know if you want to call it mistakes were made, or they just didn't make... It's not like they had, like, an A++ offseason. You can say, oh, it wasn't terrible, but it's not like they went out and surrounded this core five as and used their every dollar cap space as effectively as possible. Like, there is room for improvement.
Yes.
You can also say, like, they didn't trade their first, so they can use that. They can possibly trade that to help their team, go out and get a defenseman. The cap's going up. They're going to have Brody's money to spend, Bertuzzi's money to spend. There's money coming off the book. Like, there's going to be ways to spend money. You can kind of go out and get a big defenseman if you want to. You also have players like Cowan and Minton you can potentially trade. Like, there's ways you can convince yourself that this core five can win, right? Like, you go out and I think,
right, or at least be better maximized. So it's also possible that, okay, you know, you build the best version that you can of this team and it's not good enough. That's totally on the table too. Maybe that already happened with the 21 through 23 versions of this team.
Yeah, I think that when they had O'Reilly, like, that team was on paper pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But can you become a top five team? Like, we haven't seen this team win the President's Trophy. We haven't seen them really being all that close.
Or even seriously contend for it.
No, like, they haven't even been close. And I think you look at year after year, you see a ton of holes on the roster. I think this year was a year where they had a ton of opportunity given their cap space. And again, like, it's not like Treliving went out and, like, completely crushed them, but that blue line, given how much space they had, how much money they spent, was a pretty big disappointment. And then, I don't know, like, you look at the composition of this team, like, Holmberg as the 3C. If you would have told me last, I don't know, June 1st, that Holmberg would be the 3C come playoff time, and you showed me the picture of their defense, I would have been like, what happened, right? Like, they had all this money to spend. How is this the lineup? Because you look at, like, the positives of the Leafs, and you're like, okay, just looking at the regular season, like, Matthews, Nylander, I'd say Marner had a bit of a slow start, but had a really good year. And then, like, McMahon was already here. Knives was already here. Yarncroke was already here. Bertuzzi was fine, but, like, slow start. He's probably a $5.5 million player. I don't see a ton of surplus value there. I think Domi had some surplus value, but I don't know. Like, especially with their waivers luck. Like, they got Benoit through waivers. They had McMahon through waivers. They had Jones, who kind of helped them midseason through waivers. I think there's plenty of ways to improve this team, even if you keep the core five. So that's a path forward, and that might ultimately... The Leafs don't have any power here. Like, Marner's fully capable of saying, I'm not going anywhere. I'm walking to free agency. Like, I have a full yeah. move. Like, they might not have a choice, the Leafs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think even if they do, even if they do end up having a choice, like, the choice is really just, like, Marner, and that's it, right? So I think whether or not it's futile, the Leafs' only real path forward is let's try and build the best team we can around Matthews, Nylander, and Riley. Like, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe that team ends up not being good enough, right? But, like, that's the only thing they can do. And it's, like, at least a reasonable thing to do. It's not, like, completely insane. It's not like, okay, we're going to be watching, like, 5 years of hopeless hockey. You're probably going to be a playoff team throughout that entire time. And if you do it well, at least I think you can become a better team than they've been thus far. But in terms of, like, next steps, that's really it. And when it comes to trading Marner, you just have to evaluate, okay, well, one, is he going to allow us to do that? And two, if we trade him, does this help our goal of building a good team around these guys, right? Like, we can say, oh, this core is flawed and is never going to make it, and that might be right, but what's the option to, how do you deal with that if that ends up being the case? Are you just like, we'll trade everyone? Like, that's clearly stupid.
Yeah, I think with Marner, like, the first question, I think the first point is, like, what's he want on a contract, right? Because I think there's a lot of fans that are like, we're trading Marner regardless. Like, I don't care what he wants, gone.
Right, like, clearly, like, it's probably not a good idea to trade him into cap space, right? Like,
yeah.
If Utah is, Ryan Smith is like, okay, well, we're a cap team now because I have actual money on, like, Maruello. So I'll take Marner off your hands for nothing. And Marner was like, okay, cool. I've always wanted to live in Salt Lake City. like, the Leafs still don't do that, right?
No, you don't trade him for the sake of trading him. And, like, what if he takes a discount, which is kind of hard to fathom, but... If he were to take a discount, I would sign him. And it's like, he's a good player. I think he takes too much of the criticism. I think, yes, he deserves criticism, but there's a lot of fans that don't want to point any fingers at Matthews because he's kind of the star child. They don't want to
point
fingers elsewhere. Like, Nylander just signed, Riley just signed. I think Marner, because he's small and because of the contract negotiation, gets a lot of... maybe a little bit too much of the criticism, not that he doesn't deserve any.
No, I agree with that. Like, it's sort of futile to complain about Matthews. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, sometimes he might be a player who is 85 or 75% as good in the playoffs as he's in the regular season, but what can we do about that? He's the best player we've had in our history, pretty much, or at least in modern history.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, okay, you live with it.
With Marner, it's like, okay, like, we can think of extreme examples, right? Like, if these are hypotheticals that are never going to happen, but if he's like, I'll take $8 million, I just want to be a Leaf for life, sign that tomorrow. Mm-hmm. If he's like, I want $16 million, I think I'm better than Matthews, then it's like, okay, like, we're not giving you that. Can we trade you and get some value now? Like, where do you want to go? Give us a list. Those would be very easy decisions. I think the middle ground is going to be a bit trickier, where it's like, if he wants $500,000 more than Nylander, do you sign that deal? Right? Like, I don't know where... I think you have to figure out where the line is.
Yeah, so for me personally, like, I think Nylander's deal is already an overpay. I think if you gave Marner the exact same deal that Nylander got, it's like, it's fine. It's not amazing, it's fine.
Yeah.
Right? Anything above that, I'm like, I kind of don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah. Like...
But it's really hard to get good value on any sort of Marner trade.
I just think it's not a black and white answer like many are painting it. Like, the question is, what's the AAV for me? And then it's like a bit of a spectrum of like, okay, at this price, I'm leading trade. At this price, I'm leading keep.
Right, because it depends a lot on what the trade market is, right? Which we have no real idea about.
Yeah, so I think first is like, because you're not... I think with any Marner trade, he's got to be on board. So like... the contract side starts it. Mm-hmm. And then you go, okay, like, we don't think we're... Like, say he wants 13.5. You're going, okay, I don't think we're going to pay you that. Your options are walk to free agency or sign an extension now and we'll trade you to a spot you want to go, right? So I think that would be the more likely option, which is like the Tkachuk route. The question then for the Leafs is like, you want to make sure you're not on the Calgary side of the Tkachuk trade, or if you're not on the Panarin side when Panarin got traded to New York, right? Like, yes, you can win a Marner trade, but you can also get worse trading Marner. Like, let's be clear. Like, if they go out and let's say they did like a Marner for Huberto type trade, it's obviously not going to be Huberto, but a player like that, I saw Alex Pietrangelo's name out there, it's just from some like random fan, but like there's plenty of deals that you could get worse trading Marner.
Yeah. That's... Like this deal won't happen because like this player isn't on the trade market, but if you traded like Marner for Panarin straight up.
Yeah.
Like that probably makes you worse long term just because of age.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's plenty of Marner, or you do like the Kadri thing where you get like two okay players and like you end up like striking out on one of them, right? Like it's the easiest thing to think of would be like a defenseman you trade for and then you realize he's not that good or something, right? Like there's tons of ways you get worse trading Marner. The other thing is like if I'm Marner, where would I want to go, right? Like Florida, Tampa are probably the first two teams on a lot of teams' list because of their success, because of the weather, because of the no state tax. It's going to be, I don't even know if the Leafs would trade him there. Like, it would be such a hard trade to maneuver with a division rival. A lot of the teams that would probably be willing to pay the most for Marner are the teams that he's not going to want to go to, right? Like, the teams that really struggle to like, Utah's a perfect example. Like, they might have a hard time getting free agents. And so I think they would be the most willing to give up a haul for Marner. That would make the most sense. Again, the other team that I think would be interesting is the Islanders, because like Lou's kind of had a history of going out and getting players he used to play for him, and the Islanders have like very little star forwards, and like Dobson would be kind of cool. I don't know, like, but again, like Marner has all the power here with the no move. Like he could just say you could say I'm going to these three teams or I'm walking free agency, right?
Well, and let's say Marner makes it clear to all parties, okay, I'm willing to go to the Islanders.
Yeah.
Right? The Islanders are going to say, well, we're not giving up Noah Dobson. We'll try our chances with Marner in a year. You're not getting Dobson. Like, Dobson's like, one of our best players.
But, like, right? You could say the same thing I think, like, for Tkachuk, I think.
Sure, but, like, that's how they're going to negotiate.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, And if they know this is the only spot that Marner wants to go to, like this is the only team that Marner's given you permission to talk to, well, they have a lot of leverage within that trade too.
Right. Like Marner could completely hurt Toronto's leverage. Like,
yes.
He could give them a situation where they have a decent amount of leverage if he goes, hey, I'll sign with any team for this. The other thing too is like Marner's price is going to drive his trade value. Like if he's saying I'm not signing, I want 14.5, then teams are going to be hesitant to trade a ton for him because they're getting 1 year surplus value, but then it's, you know, you're kind of just paying market value or even like you're paying above market value for him. If he's willing to sign for Nylander's contract, then maybe he has more value, but his ask, like his next contract ask and the amount of teams he's willing to sign with is going to completely change what the Leafs can get for him. And depending on how that shakes out, it could be easy. It could be very, very difficult to win a Marner trade if he's stubborn and gives you a small list and says he wants a huge amount of money. I don't think the Leafs are going to get that huge trade return that you're expecting or that you need in order to improve. So.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, the Leafs are, the time to make one of these moves is not now necessarily, or like it can be now, but like the optimal time to make this move was like, you know, a couple years ago if you were going to make it.
Yeah, before the new movement clock, like you want the Leafs to have as much power as possible. And then you look at Tree Living, like it's kind of scary given what happened with Tkachuk. Like I don't think we talk about how bad the Tkachuk trade was. Like you traded one of the most valuable players in the game for like negative value, right? Like Huberto's a net negative. Uyghurs may be a slight net positive on that contract, but I almost think they would have been better off giving Tkachuk away for free than to you know, when you consider the extension. I guess it's like this is a much more complicated thing than like a yes or no. Like if you do the other aspect of trading Marner, like the one thing that's easy to get is cap space from this, right? Like if you are you willing to take futures, are you willing to take prospects for Marner? Because if you're flexible on what you can take, then you can get the best possible package. The problem is that the Leafs are in the middle of a contending window here because Matthews is in his prime. And, you know, if you trade Marner for, say, futures, or, you know, if a big part of the return is the cap space involved, can you go out and sign a free agent that replaces a lot of that value? Like, Stamkos is 34. That's kind of scary. Reinhart, I think, is going to get paid. I think that would scare me. Gensel, does he want to sign in Canada? Like, it's a bit iffy. Like, it's not like there's tons and tons of like free agents in their prime that I'm dying to sign here. I do think like you'd almost need your centerpiece. I don't think you could go the futures route. Like I think you'd almost have to get a player in his prime and hopefully a player a little bit younger than Marner that plays center. Like I'm looking at like Quinton Byfield as a guy I'd want, but again, like unless you're getting Marner on a good contract, why would you give up a guy like Byfield?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly correct. Right, I don't know. On the defense side, maybe you can pry someone like. These are just random names of listing of like youngish defensemen who I know have like RFA contracts or UFA potentially contracts coming up that like maybe their teams will be interested in moving on from. Like I don't know. Okay. Is Keandre Miller good enough to be the centerpiece in a return for this?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so like Evan Bouchard is like probably untouchable, right? Dobson, as you mentioned, Jacob Chychrun, again, probably not good enough
to
be the centerpiece for a Marner deal.
You could go like the young guy route, like the Nemec or the Juracek, but we don't know who those guys are for sure, right? Like they got tons of potential, they were early picks, but that's another route. But again, like let's say they trade him from Juracek, like I'm not going to pretend I'm a Juracek expert. I haven't seen a ton of him, but like, in theory, that could be a big win or a big loss because we don't really know what he is. But that's another route they could go, I guess. Mm-hmm. But again, he's young. Like, is he going to be willing? Is he going to be ready to be a huge difference maker next year when you're trying to win during Matthews' prime? There's I guess tons of different ways they could go with it. You might get two really good players. But again, like, I guess my whole point from this, if there's one thing to take away, it's like, it's not that simple. Just like, let's trade Marner. Yes, no. You'll win any trade if you do trade him. I think it's the player has a lot to do with the return and whether he's willing to get traded in the first place. And then whether or not the Leafs get better from the Marner trade, I think is a huge debate. Like, let's see that return before we jump at any offer, I guess.
Yep, pretty much.
I guess other notes I had, like, I think the solution is just to make the best team possible every year. Like, one tweet I saw from you that I wanted to mention was just, like, kind of a big eye roll of, like, all the different messages this year of, like, the Leafs are physical now and, like, it'll be different and they can now play playoff hockey. They're now suited for it. I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not entirely sure what your tweet was, but
yeah, no. Well, it was like over the past year, and I should mention a lot of this has to do with like the frankly kind of bizarre culture war that exists between like people who support like what Brad Treliving has generally done and people who have supported what Cal Dubas generally did.
Yeah.
Right, and I'll say off rip. I do not care about that culture war. I think that's stupid. I don't care how it happens. I want the Leafs to have a general manager who just makes the team better.
Yeah.
Right? So that's all this is coming out of. And I thought some of Treliving's moves I thought were fine and, like, good. I quite liked the Bertuzzi signing, even at the time. And I think it's worked out actually, like, slightly worse than I thought, but I thought that was a totally fine move. But other moves I thought were, like, kind of stupid at the time, like the Klingberg signing. And the Reeve signing was a big example of this, yeah. As was the Kampf extension. But one of the things that always gets brought up was, like, oh, you know, Treliving knows how to build a defense. The Leafs are going to get bigger and tougher and meaner, and now they're not going to get pushed around by a team like Florida. Which I guess is technically true, because the Leafs aren't going to be good enough to make it to Florida. But, like, even in this series, the Leafs are not getting pushed around by Boston at all. But Boston's still just kind of winning everywhere.
Yeah, and it is kind of nice, like, when there is scrums and you see the Leafs player kind of have the edge over the Boston player. Like, there is a lot of scrums where, like, Reeves is in it, or Domi's in it, or Bertuzzi's in it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Edmondson's in it. It feels good in that sense. And it's like, I would rather have our team be tougher than the other team than not.
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely preferable to, you know, your players just getting the tar beaten out of them all the time. That's not ideal.
But
they also have to just be better at hockey.
Being a tough team that loses in the first round is not that much more enjoyable than being a weaker team that loses in the first round. Like, at the end of the day, like, I just care about the results and, like, how good the team is. And, like, when you're going out and adding, like Edmondson's been iffy. I think Reeves has been iffy. And I think part of the big eye roll thing is, like, you look at, like, especially last year, like, the Luke Shen, Noel Achary, like, people act as if Wayne Simmonds was...
Oh, that annoyed me so much, where it's like, oh, you know, now the Leafs have a real, like, heavyweight. It's like, okay, sure, Wayne Simmonds isn't, like, a heavyweight the way, like, Ryan Reeves is, but, like, you cannot tell me that Wayne Simmonds is not ridiculously tough.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if that's your premise, I just don't believe you. Like, I think you're full of shit if you think that Wayne Simmonds isn't tough, right? I think you're full of shit if you think, like, Ryan O'Reilly and Noah Achary,
Luke Shen.
Tough. Yeah, like, these are... if anything, you know, the Leafs have really indexed... my point of demarcation is, like, when the Leafs... Over the span of, like, a couple years or a couple off-seasons, the Leafs lost Kadri, Kapanen, and Andreas Janssen. Now, Kapanen and Janssen didn't end up doing much beyond the Leafs, but that was, like, a real kind of sea change to me in how the Leafs viewed themselves internally, because Kapanen and Janssen were, like, part of a, in theory, third line that was skilled and could score. And the Leafs have never really tried to build that sort of third line since. They've built, you know, third and fourth lines of grinders, defensive players, responsible players who, and sometimes, like, very tough, rugged players, like in the case of O'Reilly, Achary, and others. Right? And I think that's totally reasonable. I don't have an issue with that lineup construction as a whole, but the Leafs haven't been a super finesse team for a while.
Yeah, agree. And, like, when I look ahead to next season, I think the 3C thing is huge. I think that was...
Yeah,
just the fact that you could go, like, early on, when they signed Tavares, it was, like, Matthews line one, Tavares line two, Kadri line three. You're going to run that out for the next... who knows long. I was hoping it was gonna be like 5 years or something, and you just have a matchup wins up and down the lineup. Once you traded Kadri, you just never had that on your third line until O'Reilly showed up, and I thought O'Reilly was just a complete, he was playing hurt, so he wasn't maybe quite himself, but I think if O'Reilly re-signed here, which I think the gamble to trade for him and, like, hope he wants to play here was fine, like, if he would have signed here at 4.5, this is a completely different team. But now you look at the Leafs and you go, okay, like, you look at Boston where they have Lindholm, Carlo, and McAvoy. They can match up against one of your lines, right? Like, it's very easy for them to throw an amazing defensive pair out against Matthews. I think the Leafs' advantage is that they could go Marner line two, Nylander line three. Now, it hasn't worked out because Nylander wasn't on line three for the first three games. But it's not quite the same when you have Nylander playing with Holmberg, right? Like, if you had a Kadri or if you had an O'Reilly, that strategy, I think, becomes far more intriguing. Currently, it's like, yeah, you don't really have a... like, that Nylander line's not really all that dangerous because he has a supporting cast.
It's kind of Nylander doing a solo act. And I agree with you when you said that Domi, I think, has probably been surplus value,
yep,
this season. But one way in which, you know, he's an imperfect player and it sort of hurts you is that, like, you really don't want him to be your third line center in the playoffs because you have to use him so carefully as a center.
Yeah.
Right? And that hurts you a little bit as a team. Now, Domi's worth it. Like, when you're making $3 million, I don't expect a perfect
player. No.
Right? So that's fine. But, yeah, I think it's sort of a luxury that the Leafs have had intermittently where they've been able to get three centers and just be like, okay, I don't really care how these guys are played. I could just play them.
They've had it twice with Kadri there and O'Reilly there.
Yeah.
I think for next season, it's going to be hard to do, but I want Bertuzzi's money spent on a center, I think. I think, you know, Tavares can be another
year. Yeah, the thing is, it's very hard to do that in free agency. Like, you see how much money, you know, a JT Compher gets, yeah. Right?
But I think that's the way to do it. Or, like, I don't know if it's going to be Wenberg, there's going to be Lindholm. It's going to be tough to make the right move. If you do trade Marner, yeah, I'd love a center, obviously. It's the most important position, but I agree. Like,
it's not a great center class at of free agency.
And everyone wants them.
Exactly. So you're going to pay. Like, I've liked Wenberg for a while, but I don't know. Is he a guy you're happy to throw $5 million at?
Or,
probably not.
Or maybe you're committed to making a move at the deadline for a center. Like, I don't know if you could trade the first somehow for, like, an asset you can use later, or you trade the first knowing, hey, we might trade this guy for a center at next year's deadline.
Right.
But I do think that adding at center has got to be very important, and then adding on defense is very important, which just kind of goes without saying. But the center I would have said this last year, at the start of the offseason, like, O'Reilly's leaving, you got to replace that. You know, your defense needs help. They really struck out on both those fronts, right? Like, having Holmberg camp as your bottom six centers come playoff time, and then having this defense it's a problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, camp as a fourth line center, for what you're paying him, that's already, it's not like a massive issue, but that's already a little bit rich.
Oh, it's rich. It's just, he's a third line center, especially with the penalty kill struggling this much. Like, he's that fourth line was bad for most of the year, like very bad for the start of the year, and then he's kind of getting paid to be like a penalty kill, elite penalty kill specialist, right? Like, he's 5-on-5
defense. You're paying him hoping he's like Marcus Kruger, like he's your Marcus Kruger on the Dynasty Blackhawks.
Yeah,
and he's not been that.
No, he had a bad year, and in the playoffs that line's getting cooked. I mean, the problem with that fourth line is they have zero offense. Like, they're never going to score. I know they scored in game one, but they can't make up for any mistakes, so they have to play perfect hockey, and then they have made mistakes, right? Like, it's like you're hoping for 0-0,
right,
and you're not even getting that.
Right, and it's like, I've seen people say, and I largely agree with it, it's like, oh, wow, that line's been like surprisingly good in terms of carrying play and stuff. And it's like, yeah, they have. Like, they spend some shifts in the offensive zone. They're not like, when I see them, it's not like, oh, wow, this is just a disaster waiting to happen. But you know, you tally the goals, and they're I think 1-4-2 against.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, well, you know, at best that is like a little bit worse than hoped.
Yeah, the third line hasn't scored a goal, and they haven't been bad either. Like, Robertson by expected goals has been very strong. Yarncroke's been fine. He takes defensive zone starts, but it does feel like this team is basically going like, hey, our bottom six is going to do nothing and our top six is going to carry the load. And then even the second line, like, Tavares is kind of iffy at 5-on-5. He's not a star at 5-on-5 by any means. Nyes, I think
he had a good play driving year, which, but yeah, like, I agree, you have to, he's not what he used to be in that, like, before, you know, he used to be just like a set it and forget it guy. Okay, this guy goes up against whoever the other team wants, and he's just going to get 55% of the expected goals.
No, he's not a 1C
anymore. And he's not quite that anymore.
No, he used to be a clear 1C. Nyes has been, like, just okay. Like, he's not, I don't even think I'd call him a top six forward. Like, he's kind of like a third liner who's kind of playing on the second line.
Yeah, not, at this point, Nyes is just a guy.
Yeah.
Which is fine when you're 22 being just, or 21, I forget how old he is, but like when you're that age, being just a guy is totally fine. Right? That's a good thing for the rest of your career.
You'd obviously like Marner to be like McDavid could carry those two, no problem, right?
Yes.
Marner's, the results of the line are okay. They're just low event. Like, you'd like more scoring. I think Marner's actually made a couple of plays. Like, you have that amazing assist.
And like, Yeah, I mean, and he scored. Like, it wasn't garbage time, I suppose. But, like, he did score yesterday.
But it's not, like, a dominant second line that's scoring, like, crazy, right? Like,
for sure.
And I know when last year when you had O'Reilly, Tavares, Marner, I don't think they really did it much come playoff time. But you could kind of see the potential in the regular season of, okay, this could be a dominant second line before O'Reilly got hurt. They don't have that. And then their first line, it's like, Domi's like a $4 million player, I would say. I think Bertuzzi's like a 5.5. Again, you'd like Matthews to carry them. I think if he's healthy, he would. But it's not like what Edmonton has on their top line or what Colorado has on their top line. Like, you are kind of trying to spread it out a bit more. It's not really working. So, I don't know. There's a lot to complain about.
One thing I did want to mention, it's sort of, you mentioning Edmonton sort of brought it up to me. You mentioned already it's very easy to lose like a Marner trade. And I think like one of the things that is like totally within the realm of possibilities of like a Mitch Marner trade is you trade Mitch Marner, he goes to some other team, doesn't matter what team, and then he's like a point per game player in the playoffs the rest of his life.
Yeah, easily.
Because like that's basically what's happened to Zach Hyman. Zach Hyman was horrible in the playoffs for Toronto.
Phil Kessel?
Yeah. I mean, Kessel was at least like, he also performed, not that he got a huge chance to do it in Toronto, but like in that series against Boston, he was good. I think he had 6 points in 7 games.
Yeah.
And like was dangerous. Hyman was dog shit in the playoffs for Toronto. And since he's gone to Edmonton, he's like at a 50 goal pace just in the playoffs. You know? So like that can just happen.
Yeah. And Marner has put up points, like a reasonable amount of points in the playoffs. I think the timing of the points, like he's kind of, everyone always goes, oh, okay, what's he done in games 5 to 7? Right? Like a lot of his points have been like, Marner's one of those players where you don't really notice him sometimes, and then you look at the box score, he's got 3 points, and you're like, how the heck did that happen? You look at, like, if Marner goes to a team with a good power play come playoff time, like, he'd be point per game pretty quickly, right? And then you look at...
Well, I mean, like, but the thing is, like, for his money, Marner should be should be able to drive a power play.
They all should.
Right? And that's yeah, that's true of all, like, that's true of everyone on that power play, to be clear. I think this is me just like speculating. Maybe it's convenient for me to say this because it's easier to blame coaching than to blame the 5 players or 4 players. But I think it is more on coaching.
But it's been a few power play coaches too, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. So maybe it is like just these players for whatever reason.
Well, it's
are not malleable enough.
They've tried different things
to deal with like increased scrutiny.
Like Matthews used to be on the other side. Right, like you've tried them both on different sides. You've seen years where, especially early on, Nylander wasn't on the top unit. You had kind of a different look there. It's not like they haven't tried other things. I don't know if it's just good goaltending the other way. Like it's a bit of coincidence, but
I mean they've had some good power plays in the series. I mean one thing that strikes me is I felt the Leafs do a good job in the regular season of actually like mixing up their power play looks, like game to game, even power play to power play, even sometimes within the same power play. And then in the playoffs, they're just like, okay, let's do the same thing 35,000 times in a row.
And they do face good penalty kill teams. Like Tampa's amazing at it. Boston's amazing. Like you'd think Boston would be amazing at it just with their defense. So I think too, like as you said earlier, we don't want to act like the Leafs are the protagonist. Like the other team is probably really good at penalty killing, but just given how many years it's been, and like I'm watching like the Edmonton games, Colorado games, seeing these teams move the puck on the power play, and then you see the Leafs, like it's not even like they're getting goalied on the power play this year, like they just completely can't move the puck. Like
it's right, yeah, like they struggle to get the zone, and then when they get the zone, it's like just passing on the outside of the umbrella until one of, you know, the three guys there gets impatient and takes a shot.
Yeah. And, like, I think that the outside two, like, Matthews and Nylander are on the outside all year. Those are the two that, you know, Nylander missed the first 3 games. Matthews has been sick. Like, I do have some excuses for the power play in that regard. Tavares, I think, you know, win the faceoff is kind of the key for him. And then I do think that he's a good net front scorer if you set him up. It's just, like, he is a bit limited in terms of, like, his skating and his... You know, he's kind of limited to the net front role or the bumper spot. Marner's just a weird fit because you're like, you kind of want Nylander and Matthews on the outside for their one-timers because that's typically the guys that are on the outside of the power play have great one-timers. And then Marner's not really like a JVR net front guy. You could put him in the bumper, but that's not really where he plays. or you put him on the point, but they haven't really done that. So I do think Marner's, maybe you put him on power play two at some point or something and you try that, but they need answers because regardless of how good the power play is in the regular season next year, like, you just have no faith or no confidence that it's going to carry over.
Right.
They could be like the old Edmonton power play, and you're like, I don't know if this is going to work. But any last thoughts before we get out of here, just in terms of either the series as a whole or just next steps going forward?
No. I mean, I think it's been pretty comprehensive. Like, the big thing is, like, I don't think the Leafs have a bajillion options. And I think it's, like, sort of unpleasant. Fulman and I have said this on our podcast kind of almost every single season. Like, okay, it doesn't feel great, but probably the best option is to just keep trying to build the best team you can around Austin Matthews, right? Because, you know, as frustrating as it is, as much as it feels like insanity just doing the same thing a bajillion times in a row, I don't think you get a lot better just by trading him and, like, trying to give up and move on and build up for the next guy. Like, you don't get Marner. Austin Matthews very
often. It's Marner, right? Yeah. Like, Matthews is staying. It's Marner that it's, like...
Yeah, no. I'm not saying, like... I'm saying that ultimately you have to build around Austin Matthews. You have no choice but to do
yes.
that. You can't trade him. You won't trade him. Like, everything you do should just be around building around Austin Matthews, even if you think it's futile, even if you're like, okay, it's been 8 years of doing this and we haven't done anything. Yep. You have no other choice.
Right.
That's what it
comes down to. I think if you trade Marner specifically, then it's like something's different. The team's built different. You don't have the core four thing anymore. Like, if they did trade Marner, the success would either be over, like, Marner would either take way too much. If they're all setting good, everyone would point fingers being like, oh, Marner was the problem the whole time. I don't think that's the case. Like, it would probably get overblown. But I do think that at this time of the year, every year, we talk about, like, oh, fans want to see something different. And then typically the roster looks much different come October because, like, last offseason, you know, you had Bertuzzi, you had Domi. There's players to get excited about. There's a reason to think, you know, this will be different. They have this. I think that'll be the case again, even if they don't trade Marner, where they'll just change up around the core and they'll have a different look and fans will get somewhat excited. But I do think the whole thing here is the Marner contract negotiation / trade. Like, that's going to be the story of the offseason for me.
Yep, pretty much. And, I mean, you don't want to make a trade for the sake of making a trade, obviously, right? It goes without saying. But this is kind of a hanging cloud over the team. And from a fan perspective, I sort of get the impetus for being like, of a fan saying, even if it's like an even trade and you don't think this makes you a lot better, like, from a mental reset perspective, maybe it's helpful.
Yeah.
Right? But obviously that doesn't mean you fire Marner into the sun just to, like, watch him.
Well, same with, like, the Dubas thing. Like, I don't know if switching him out and Treliving in really improved things. Sure, there's some people listening that are screaming at that, saying, oh no, Treliving's clearly better. Oh no, Dubas is clearly better. But I do think it is nice, just like, if the Leafs lose in game five, like, just having a different storyline, right? Like, if Dubas was still here, that's all you'd hear about. It is nice having, like, a different storyline or, like, just different things to talk about. Like, if they do trade Marner, like, if they do lose first round next year, at least from a fan perspective, it's like, okay, at least there's someone different to blame or someone different to talk about. But I think one way or another, like, the interesting thing about Marner is, like, we're going to get an answer, whether it's a trade or whether it's an extension, right? Like, pretty quick. It might not be this offseason, but if he doesn't sign this offseason, that's the storyline until we get an answer.
Yep, pretty much.
So it's not like Nylander or Tavares where it's like, don't even talk about that because it's not happening. Like, you're wasting everyone's time. Like, this is going to be a huge story going one, regardless of what happens, right? Like, if he gets traded, it's going to be a massive story. I think fans will talk themselves into the return, regardless of what it is, at least from the get-go. And then if he signs, it's going to be an interesting day on on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, if if Marner signs an extension.
Yeah, yeah, to say the least.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. That was a good, I don't know, recap of the situation. Hopefully I'll have you back on if the Leafs come back against Boston and we see a Leafs Cup run here. We'll have to, hopefully we're on this podcast in about a month or two and talking about the Leafs Cup when they came back from Boston.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
I don't think so.
I'm not holding my breath for that.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think we'll be I might have to have you on if they trade Marner, though, because that'll be worth a few.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one.
But anyways, thanks everyone for listening, and hoping to have a podcast for you next week.